It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Last month, the motion picture The Interview made headlines due to terroristic threats. This led to Sony Pictures taking a self-censorship stance and deciding not to release the picture to movie theaters. As you know, the film was eventually released and no one was hurt as a result. The saga of The Interview is the latest story in the annals of film censorship, a history that has ties to Pittsburgh. And here to tell us more is pop culture contributor Joe Wose. Joe, good to see you again. How are you?
Nice to be here. I'm doing well, thanks.
Many people are calling what happened with The Interview an act of censorship. The film was voluntarily pulled and then restored after threats of violence. Is this an unusual case of self-censorship?
It is unusual in that it is one of the few times that a studio has backed down. You know, there have been, you know, threats over films for since its inception, 100 years. So it's unusual. The only other case I could think of that is as sort of, widespread and recognized as the same situation would be Birth of a Nation. When that came out, you had so many protesters out there trying to just block this film that you had cities like Pittsburgh that actually blocked it from screening. The city stepped in and said, this will not screen in Pittsburgh.
And this is the 100th anniversary of the year that Birth of a Nation was released, a landmark year in film for many reasons. But it's also a notorious year because it marked the beginning of government censorship of film. What happened? Why was there such a controversy? Why were people demonstrating?
So by 1950, you have sort of this landmark film, very controversial film, Birth of a Nation.
D.W. Griffith.
Yes. And what happened is you had these protests happening. You had people questioning the content of the film. Films made a huge leap from sort of this, amusement, you know, just these sort of shorts, you know, to now being these feature length films that try and tell a real story. And you have Pennsylvania in particular sees what's happening, and they're the first state to sort of step in and say, you know, there's some stuff going on in film that we don't like. We don't think people should be seeing some of this. It's corrupting the morals of our cities, our state, our community. So we've got to step in and do something about it. So that's what happens in 1915. Pennsylvania really starts up. They pass the laws in the 1911. It takes them a few years to actually get it funded and pass through, and then they become the first state to have a censorship review board. And they review every single film that comes through, primarily looking at moral issues.
But what was it about Birth of a Nation? I mean, there are definitely some controversial aspects to this film, but what was it that specifically that set people off here?
It was a pro-Klan film. It was very much an endorsement of the Ku Klux Klan. And so, you know, in the northern states in particular, it was just, you know, it was repulsive, as it still is. It's an very uncomfortable watch today. But back then it was just you had people who had just sort of, you know, were getting through and slavery was still relatively, you know, in their memories. I mean, this was something that was just as it is today. But back then, there was still a connection.
Well, you had the Civil War. It had only been 50 years prior, and this was in the period of the Great Migration. So you could see where people of all races would have objected to it.
So you had, you know, cities like Pittsburgh that are trying to integrate. You have, you know, the industry rising up in the mills. So you have, you know, minority groups coming here, and then this film comes out, and it's just polarizing. So, you know, they felt that this was sort of the time to step in, to really step things up and say, okay, we've got to have more control over the content of the films. So they really used that as a real big grab. You know, once that came out, they said, here's our argument for why we need to do it. And that's exactly what they did.
And, you know, is it censorship in the sense that you're trying to point out to people that this is something that is offensive, and yet at the same time, should people be allowed to see it and decide for themselves as offensive as it is?
I think you have to allow this. One of the arguments that was used by cities and states and censorship free boards is the idea of redeeming quality. that you could show things that were controversial or offensive if they had some sort of socially redeeming quality. And they seldomly would acknowledge that in any film. Film after film, they'd just say, no socially redeeming quality. It cannot screen in
Pennsylvania. So they were using – they were pointing out something that was clearly repulsive, which you can't get much more repulsive than a pro-Klan film. And yet people were using that as an excuse to censor other things.
Yes. I mean they had a list of things they censored. You couldn't show drugs. You couldn't show childbirth. You couldn't show white slavery. You could show African-American slavery but not white slavery. You couldn't mention birth control. You couldn't show body parts, sensual kissing, adultery, immodest bathing or dancing. One of the more interesting things in Pennsylvania that was on their list was you couldn't show anything that ridiculed a race or social group. So there you have sort of that positive element that they're trying to enforce, but you have all these other things and, you know, probably most importantly, no sacrilegious material. And that continued through to, you know, really relatively recent times, this idea that, you know, sacrilege is something, you know, keep your hands off because, you know, the church had their involvement in this too.
Which I was going to ask you about. What role did religious institutions play in all of this?
Well, religious institutions actually had their own boards. In 1934, 11 churches on the north side created this ban essentially on immoral films. And all their parishioners were forbidden from seeing these films, anything that they found morally objectionable. So you had the churches coming in saying, you know, these are corrupting our people. We need to keep them on the fold and we need to let them know this is inappropriate. But they, again, would take this a step further. They exerted an awful lot of influence on our government. And in turn, our government then censored a lot of these films. Between 1916 to 1933, over 4,000 films were censored in Pennsylvania. 4,000. So that's an awful lot of films that had objectionable content. And the question is, you know, who were objecting to this? It was a group of, you know, it started with three people and then was expanded about 40 people. So you had a handful of people really determining what was appropriate for the public to see.
And the ironic thing is that they were concerned about certain racial groups being ridiculed, and yet for decades after this, African Americans were ridiculed on film in a lot of different stereotypical roles. So the question then becomes, when did government censorship in Pennsylvania come to an end?
You know, that's an interesting question because it did technically come to an end in 1956. The act that had created it was revoked by Pennsylvania Supreme Court. So that's it. It was gone. And then Governor David L. Lawrence reenacted it. He put a new board into place to try and, again, appease sort of the Catholic Church and other groups. So he actually tried to reenact this.
Do we know why? Kind of pandering to
It was pandering to very specific groups. You know, in the 1960s in particular, you had films. There wasn't a rating system in place yet. You had more adult content being put out there, you know, in the
late – the end of the Hays Code.
You had the Hays Code in effect, but really that was
people
up
were ignoring
to,
it.
Hays Code was being ignored by the 1960s. It could be, you know, adopted or not adopted. Most places, you know, the studios were trying to push the envelopes. Particularly horror films were really starting to push the envelope of this gore. You started to see things like, you know, Satanism and monsters creeping into our film genres.
But also sexual content. I mean, in the early 60s, Lolita.
We're seeing a lot of it. You know, in 1963, you had Jane Mansfield, Promises, Promises, opens in Pittsburgh. Okay? The police show up, shut it down. It was not allowed to screen in Pittsburgh. It was just shut down by the attorney general, just said, this is not going to be allowed to show. It has no socially redeeming qualities. And they just shut it down. So this was going on into the 60s. In the late 60s, 1968, there was a French film called Therese and Isabel. It was banned in Pittsburgh because it depicted a lesbian relationship. So this is in the late 1960s. We're still seeing this.
We're talking with our culture contributor, Joe Woese, about the history of film censorship, which definitely has a history in Pittsburgh. And why did film censorship continue well into the 1970s in Pittsburgh, Joe?
You know, again, it was this idea you had this strong moral code. you know, that you wanted to adhere to. And, you know, you had this sort of blue-collar work ethic in Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh in particular, and a lot of that was sort of based around family, and family was based around the church. There was this strong moral guidance that we needed to have. And so that had just a really tremendous influence in Pittsburgh. You know, the Catholic Church in particular was very influential and remains influential, but had a very direct interest in, you know, protecting its parishioners, protecting its people from what it viewed as a real threat.
Martin Scorsese's film, The Last Temptation of Christ, was protested nationwide. How was it received here in Pittsburgh?
In Pittsburgh, again, you had very, very outspoken opposition to it. 4,000 protesters showed up for a candlelight vigil in Oakland, surrounding the theater to stop. This is King's Court. I don't know if you remember King's Court.
Yes, right on Forbes Avenue there.
On Forbes Avenue. So you had 4,000 people show up. They were estimating, the papers were saying, we'll probably get, maybe they'll get 100 protesters if they're lucky. 4,000 people showed up. So you really had, you know.
And remind us what the issue was here again.
The issue with Last Temptation of Christ was it showed a alternative possibility that what would have happened if Jesus would have gotten married and lived out his life. That concept alone was just considered so sacrilegious and so offensive that that is what gave rise to the protest.
It's very fascinating. We seem to think that, especially with the interview, that the issue of censorship and debates about what is appropriate and not appropriate to be put on the screen, it's been up for debate, and it's nothing new. As you've just pointed out, Joe, a whole history of it here, and certainly one in Pittsburgh. Joe Woes, our culture contributor, talking about film and film censorship. Joe, as always, great thanks.
Well, thanks for having me.
And thank you for listening to Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. If you missed any portion of the program or would like to revisit past segments, you can go to our website at wesa.fm. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Have a great weekend, everyone.